I'm Australian, I grew up in the Gym Polite Society, people interrupt me all the time. So it's unlikely an English person ever offend me. It's very polite. I even see around places and church halls and railway stations where they want to put up a notice, you know, telling people to do something. They put their hand up, a polite notice. No one in Australia would bother putting up the word polite. Just say, whatever. So please, as I'm going, if you want to interact, make comments, questions, etc., please feel free to do it. We're going to investigate the wonderful world of Everett's.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Just in getting going, there's seven things I want to talk about. Here's the first one. And you might want to draw a diagram in a moment. But there are different sorts of parents. So when we talk about parents, I want you to understand there's a whole myriad of people that we're talking about. If this wonderful white here represents, let's just change the angle a little bit for you guys. If this is parent land, this is a pen, doesn't work. Let's go with parent land up here. I just, what I want to do is just categorise that there's numbers of different sorts of parents that you'll meet and interact with in your career in youth ministry. If this board represents all parents, then within the parents, there are the church parents, that is, the parents that actually attend the church you're involved with, and then there's the unchurched parents out here. But you know that there's more categories than that. Because let's just divide this up a little bit. This side here can be Christian parents, some of which are in church, some of which aren't. And over here is the non-Christian parents. We've now got four categories of parents to deal with. So let's not complicate it too much. Let's do one more category here. In the top half here, you have the onside parents. And in the bottom half, you've got the offside parents. Does all that make sense? So you've got Christian parents who go to your church that are actually offside with what you're doing. That's one category there. You've got non-Christian parents, not in the church, you're actually on-site, that's there. And probably deep down, the absolute easiest area to deal with, eventually, is probably these wonderful parents over here, the Christian parents who are part of your church and absolutely on-site with where you're headed. So, as we talk, can you keep those categories in mind? And when we get to our last point here, I'm going to be asking you, what are the sticking points? What are the obstacles? What are the things that actually just make life a little bit hard for you? So the first thing about parents is there really are different sorts of parents. Let me go to the second thing. Parents are the principal disciplers of their children. And if you want to be a little provocative, you can add the words for good or ill. Well, whether they're discipling them well or badly, they are still the principal disciples. Nobody else can ever have the impact on a young person that a parent can have, whether the parents are brilliant or not brilliant. And hopefully the Christian parents are discipling their children to Christ. The non-Christians might be discipling them towards who knows what, but they still have the primary place, which you can never take over. You can be helpful, you can come alongside, you can intervene, but in the end, the kid only has their own set of parents, and you know if you try to take over that role, number one, you might end up with a child that you don't want, but you may well get pushed away by the child. No matter how bad his dad is, you're not going to be his dad. You'll get a helpful adult, but not his dad. So, parents are the principal disciples for good or ill. Now, when you're dealing in children's ministry, very much our role, if I'm a children's worker, is to support Christian parents and help them disciple their children. You'll notice that not every structure in our church helps you to do that. Some of our children's structures almost presuppose that Christian parents have nothing to do and give it all to the children's worker. But very much with children, you're going to help support the parent in their role as disciples. Because of weird cultural things, and I basically blame England for most of this, the Industrial Revolution will do. With the Industrial Revolution and all sorts of things going on, culturally we now have this group or class of people called adolescents. And they're kind of resistant to letting their parents disciple them. So when we deal with parents of teenagers, often we can be a great asset to those poor parents, because whereas children are reasonably happy for their parents to disciple them, just culturally, a lot of teenagers aren't. Doesn't mean we take the place of the parents, but it means under their authority, they call us in as outside help. So that we can say to their children exactly the same things that they would, except we have much more reasonable chance of getting a good response. One of the frustrating things I've had, by the way, as a youth pastor, is being aware of how little leverage I have with my own children. Kids in our youth group, I can go up and talk to them and say, hey, haven't noticed your Bible study. Tell me how it's going. And challenge them very directly on where they stand with my own kids. I got no hope. I've got to get someone else to come along and do it. I'd love to say it myself, but I know the response I would have got from my good and godly adolescent children. And so I wisely chose to get somebody else to say, look, can you have my son's reading his Bible at all? Could you, just when an accident comes up in conversation, have a chat with him? So our role is to support parents in their Christian discipling, not to take over, and to always act under the parents' authority. And you don't get any access to any kid unless the parents allow it. That is, Christian or non-Christian, church joined church, on-site or off-site. So, sometimes youth pastors and youth leaders in Australia, passionate to do their ministry, actually push parents aside and say, you don't know what they're doing, we will do it for you. Now, just try to think like a parent. Try and feel how you would feel if a youth pastor in your church gave you that impression that you were needed in the process and they would do a better job with your kids than you would. So I just want to urge you, always respect and understand the position of parents, whether they're doing a brilliant job or not so brilliant job. So point one was understand the different sorts of parents. Point two is remember that parents are the principal disciples of their children. Okay, let's get to some fun stuff. Number three, inform your parents. Try to think like a parent as you run your youth ministry. If you happen to be a parent, this is dead easy. If you're a 22-year-old young gun, this is a little hard. But you've actually got to try and think, what would a parent expect? And if you're not sure, I'll give you the biggest clue now. Written information. Every parent wants written information on what their child is doing. No use sending little Johnny home to say, we're going 10 bowling, 10 pin bowling next week, can I have 10 pounds? A parent doesn't want that. They need a note written by you with your signature at the bottom that actually spells out, and it's got the permission slip or whatever else you need to do. Think like a parent and just think, what would a parent expect? And information is the key. When I started coaching my son's football team, he was an under-9. Now, we signed him up with a pagan club playing in a pagan competition. So there was no expectation of being Christian. I was determined to... And what you guys see, one of the problems of little kids' sport is over-enthusiastic parents who just tend to sort of... Yeah, someone should be banned from sporting grounds for life. I produced a newsletter every week. Now, the club wasn't great at getting out information, but as the coach, I produced a newsletter every week for the kids to give to their parents. I actually said to the parents, every time the boy comes to training, he will take home a parent's news sheet. And I tell them what we're doing at training. There'd be a reminder about the upcoming match, you know, the day that we're on duty roster, stuff like that. But I'd share a little bit of my observations and values as a coach. But the main thing was that the parents knew what was happening, because if you think your teenagers will inform their parents of what you told them at the youth group, well, if that happens, then British teenagers are far in advance of Australian teenagers. Most kids don't tell their parents nothing. So inform your parents, think like a parent, make them written and make it accurate. Like, double check the date, that the day and the day actually match. And if you don't understand how to spell, then find someone who knows how to spell, or at the very worst, use your spell checker on your computer, because if a parent wants to be a nitpicker, they'll pick up on things like bad spelling and bad grammar. So just run it past somebody, not quite sure, just run it past someone else. It's a professional note going home from a professional youth organisation, yours. Just like that at secondary school. Yeah.
Is there anything you can do for parents who are not particularly onside or offside, but just parents who don't seem to be interested, so you send information to them, but it becomes clear that they're not actually reading it? I mean, I know some of ours who open it, see that it's from the church and hand it to their children, and this is church parents.
Yeah, I don't worry too much about that. Unless someone shows that they're offside, I include them as onside.
Okay.
Always. If that parent then objects that they didn't know something, you say, oh my goodness, haven't you been in the research? That's terrible. We need to fix this problem. Let's find out why you're not getting them. Let's talk to little Johnny and just like, would it help if I emailed it or posted it to you each week? Does that make sense? You take the gracious assumption that they haven't done anything wrong, but you're surprised they don't know what you're doing because, my goodness, we notified everybody. I wonder what could have happened. Let's fix that problem so it doesn't happen again. But unless they declare they're offside, they're onside.
Okay.
In fact, it might be that putting it aside and not reading it might actually show they trust you. Because if they didn't trust you, I suspect they'd probably read it. But that's a good point.
It might be that they get lots of other pieces of paper from school and clubs and all the other things, they get inundated with computers.
Yes, information overload time, because we've all got computers that can produce far more information than anyone can ever read. And if that's the case, don't stop sending it.
A lot more notice of stuff that come back from school. Some of my parents do than they do of stuff I send them.
Oh, well.
I don't know why they seem to treat the church as, oh, well, I'll deal with that later, but the school stuff very prompt in getting replies and contact and things like that.
Yeah, schools in Australia hold much more sway with parents, Christian and non-Christian, than churches ever do. But I wouldn't be worried about that. My idea is the information I send home is far better presented than what the school sends home. Now, it depends if the school's sending home, you know, glossy coloured brochures every week. But generally, I find teachers at schools, information to parents is one of the last things they do in the day. And I seriously try to make our newsletters, you know, just look professional, look great, etc. But in the end, yeah, parents probably do put more weight on what a school says or what the doctor says than the person in charge of running their child's spiritual eternity. It's just the way we are. I don't
think how much information would you want to put about the teaching program and the...
Oh, headlines. I might be saying, here's what we're doing this term.
Yeah.
A series on investigating Jesus. Week one, power over creation. Week two, power over sickness. Week three, power over people. I wouldn't give much more than that, but I know churches that, you know, give them a little story about every week. I got a feeling that that's a bit too much information. I just want to give them the headlines that they can read quickly and easily. Give them a bit of paper, they should be able to read in 5 minutes, I think. Anything longer than 5 minutes, most of us never read. And if you're sending an email, it's got to fit on the screen. Anything that's longer than the screen, people turn off it. So, I'd go for the headlines.
Okay.
just enough information, so if they want to know more, they can contact you. Enough information. Now, and I honestly think if you keep parents informed, you will actually head off a lot of difficulties. I just find in my church, lack of information is one of the key reasons that parents will end up in the offside side of halfway here. Little assistant referee with a flagger. So that's a bit on informing. Step four, involve your parents. Ooh, this is fun. This is difficult. If you go to a church and you're a young youth pastor, parents can be a little bit intimidating. And I think in my early days of being a youth pastor, I saw that the parents' primary role was to produce teenagers. Well, by a slow growth process. That is, how did the parents factor in our youth ministry? They conceived and bore children, let them grow up into their teens, and then deliver them to us. I think I probably undervalued the role of parents in our ministry. And even if you're a young youth pastor, don't be scared by them, because there's a whole lot of parents in the on-site department, and the more you involve them, the more likely you're actually going to get people over there. So here's some thoughts, and please interact with any of these, ask questions, throw in examples, otherwise if you just let me keep talking, you'll just get an early mark and then you'll have to rest before dinner, supper. Involve your parents. Set an environment where parent-age people are welcomed at youth activities. Right, set an environment where parent-aged people are welcomed at youth activities. Parents will quickly pick up when they deliver little Johnny to your youth group. They will quickly pick up whether they themselves are welcomed or whether they themselves are turned away. I want to send the message out. We want people of all ages working in that gap. What I'm really aiming for, I want some parents who actually say, could I help? And by the way, if you're getting parents say, can I help, we actually want them to come from that square. You want parents at your church who are Christians, who are on side of what you're doing. If you let parents come and help from any of these sections, you may be setting yourself up for problems.
Yes. What do you think about getting parents involved who have got children that who are still in the youth group?
Yes, I do that. There's one proviso, a couple of provisos. Number one, the child has the right of veto. So we actually empower the child and go back to here he is, little Ricky here, and hey Ricky, you know how we get some different leaders in and some people are sort of parent age. Your mum has actually expressed a large interest in helping us out with your youth group. Boy, doesn't that sound like fun? So, Ricky, tell me, we're not going to go ahead with this until I've chatted through with you, but you kind of matter in this. What would it be like for you if your mum was one of our youth leaders? Now, if he said, oh, that's fine, that's it. But if he said, then we'll talk it through. Now, if in the end he's saying, I don't want this to happen, I will try and say, can we just think about this a moment longer? I understand it might be a little bit awkward, but we'll keep her away from you, we won't put her in your small group, you know, she'll be over there, and if there's any problems at any stage, you can come to me and say it's not working. Could we give it a try? So I'll have a few shots at it, but in the end, he says, she comes, I go. I'll go back to his mum and say, not yet. Not for the sake of the youth group, but for the sake of family relationships. Because if she comes and he goes, okay, our youth ministry will suffer because we've just lost Ricky. Ricky's fantastic. But you can see that's going to cause problems at home, isn't it? And the Christian church would never cause problems at home, would it? Never. So, proviso one is, kid gets the right of veto. I don't tell them they have the right of veto. I just say, we're not going to do this unless you and I have chatted it through, okay? And some kids have actually said, no, I just don't want it. I said, okay, I understand. Go back to the parents and say, not yet. Why don't we have another shot next year? There's a couple of other provisos, which I'll get back to. Are you on the same point?
Well, I've come across that situation quite a number of times. I have parents that are enthusiastic and want to help, but their kids are like, no way, that's just not cool having mom or dad there. and we end up putting them in different roles that maybe aren't up front, maybe helping with preparing food for youth group, or even letters or birthday cards going out to the youth.
Yes, yeah, so certainly behind the scenes stuff, or if you've got a younger and older group, sometimes you can put them in the different group. But I don't see a problem with having them in the same group. There's a couple more providers we're going to get to, but if you're on the same point, we'll take any questions.
Yeah, when you're talking about, not providers, but when you're talking about the whole environment where parents are working, can you give me a moment of that? Or is it just a sense of, hey, you can come in?
Okay, what's your last name, sir?
Velikov.
Mr. Velikov, thank you for bringing Joey along to the youth group. Hey, that's it. Must take a little bit out of your way and drop them off like this. Hey, listen, do you want to stop for a moment and just have a look around at what they're doing? You know, even on that level, rather than, okay, thank you, you can go now, just to welcome them, invite them in, call them by their last name with their title, and it says, not Mr. Velikov, it's Dr. Velikov, you know. As soon as you've got your first parent working in that youth group, this becomes a thousand times easier. But even if you don't, just little things like that, and even, you know, I'll get this a bit later, but putting on things like every now and again a parent's, if you call dinner supper, what do you call a little snack late at night?
Snack.
That's a supper as well.
Well, that's tea.
It's not chicken or not supper. With the U word, it's tea here, dinner or tea. Okay, when I say supper, I mean refreshment late at night, not a three-course meal. If you actually have a parent's supper, made at the end of youth group, and let's just say, you know, parents, when are you picking kids up? This week you'd like to come half an hour early, got a little cafe set up, want you to meet some of the leaders, and just through the window you'll be able to see some of the things that your teenagers are doing. Little things like that, to just include them, and that when they come, you're not just thinking, we've got their kid, I'm going to minister to the kid. I want to minister to the kid, do you mind? But actually ministering to the family when they're there. The younger your leaders, the harder that is going to do. That's why I'll talk about getting parents soon. Provisos for parents who work in the same youth group as their kid. Number one proviso is, you clear with the kid before it's set in concrete. Second proviso would be, you train the parents, I think there's two things. If it turns out to three, then I just can't count. Number one, when they're at the youth group, they are a youth leader, not a parent. That means they don't discipline their own child at the youth group, ever. Now, my kids didn't get a say in this. Nobody consulted my kids about me being the youth pastor. So my kids went to every youth group their entire life, had me at the front of every camp they ever went on, had me. And even though they're in the small groups, they did Bible studies written by me. It was all pervasive. The dad culture in my four kids was just all pervasive. I made sure if one of my kids was misbehaving at youth group, I would grab the mirror and say, you tell my son to get off the chandelier. Now. So, at youth group you are a youth leader, not a parent. Don't do parent things. Secondly, it's somebody else's discipline of kids. And thirdly, never raise at home something you saw at the youth group. Because no other parent gets to do that. Don't raise problems. You know, when you get home, I noticed that at the youth group, you weren't talking to those new kids. Another leader can do that if they need to. We have actually found this pretty smooth. Once it's established that parent-age people are youth leaders, it's easy to get the next one with the kids. There's also a demographic bias in this. If you're in a suburban setup, it's harder to get parents. If you're in a village setup, it's easier. Why is it easier in a village? Because no one else will do it. The smaller the town, the more likely you'll have parents as your main youth leaders, because there's no room to do it. But I think that's an advantage. So I would actually work to have parents involved. We have struggled with this one. It hasn't been easy, so you've got to do a few sneaky things. Somebody suggested getting the work behind the scenes, getting them to come in for a small job where they just sort of look from the outside. That can be a good way to get them in. The The other way we do it is ask them for a short-term project. Will you come away on our weekend camp and be our camp mum and dad? And when they recoil in horror, make sure you tell them what their role is. Now, I went on a camp recently from another church, and they had a camp mum and dad who would say to me each night as it was going to bedtime, they'd say, "We're out on Pash Patrol." Now, the word Pash means something new. It's a slang term for kissing. "We're on Pash Patrol." I say, "You're doing what?" "We're on Pash Patrol. We're just going to make sure that, you know, the young men and the young women are, you know, kissing each other." And I said, "Oh my goodness, that would be terrible. People would be angry with each other." And sometimes a parent on a camp thinks they get good policemen. We give our parent on a camp a, you know, little ministry description sheet. Their number one job is to support the leaders. You say, "You look after the leaders first." The kids come after that. It's the number one job, get around the leaders and just say, "You know, how you going? There's a great bunch of girls in your cabin. How is it?" Secondly, they deal with emergencies. Emergencies might be behaviour problems. Emergencies might involve emergency personnel, police, fire, ambulance. They deal with hospital trips. I don't want our leaders leaving camp to go to the hospital with kids, broken their legs and all that sort of stuff. But we have found that when parents come on our camps and they see for the first time what we really do, and they see a disciple-making ministry, and they see kids getting out of their seats and coming forward and giving their life to Christ, we've got a waiting list of parents to come on our camps now. We've got so many, and because they tell their friends, they sit down in their home groups and say, "I went as a house parent on Crossfire's camp. You should see what they do. I was standing at the back of the hall crying when I see young people giving their lives to Christ." And they tell their friends, and their friends come up and approach us and say, "Can we come on the next camp?" So when we, our summer camp, which is on right now, we have four sets of house parents on there because it's sort of spread over about four different sites. And we have people that we haven't invited this time. We just rotate them a little bit so that they get around. Now, what grew out of that was parents saying, "Would you like us to come every week to the youth group? Not as leaders, we don't want to run the program, but just to be mum and dad at the youth group." And I said, "Sure." And so every week at our junior high, 11s to 14s, and our 14s to 18s, we have two different sets of parents, and then we usually have one overall coordinating, sort of stay there the whole night. And they want to do it, and they're just around. They make cups of coffee for the leaders sometimes. When the program's on, they're probably just outside the hall. We've got 5 acres on our property. They do a bit of a scout around to see if there's any kids hiding in the toddler's cubby house or invading the old people's home next door. They spot intruders, if the police need to be called or fire brigade. They tend to do that. So they're not running the youth group, but they're there. And when they're there, they get to meet parents who show up. So, this nice man, Mr. Bellicott?
Dr. Bellicott.
He's coming up, he's with a doctor. Professor?
No, I'm not.
The right... the right reverend brings his child up. The youth leader can actually focus on the child. One of our parents is around, spotting another parent bringing their kid up, makes a beeline over and says, "Hi, I'm Mr. Kafoos. I'm one of the, unfortunately known, but a great guy. I'm one of the parents on the team here, and we're here each week. Can I show you around a little bit? If you've got any concerns, talk to me." Because one of the things we're trying to do with parents is get parent-to-parent contact. So if there's any reason we've got to notify kids' parents, we get one of our parents to make the phone call. You know the phone call which says, "We've just called the ambulance for your child"? That sort of phone call. Or, "Having spoken to your child on a number of occasions, we're at the point of excluding your child from our youth group. We need you to come and pick them up now." And if you've ever done that from a campsite, you'll know that it's a fun call. We get our parents to do it. And that blows my poor 22-year-old leaders. We've had to confront an angry 40-year-old father that he's got to come and drive for 3 hours to pick up his daughter in the middle of the night from a wayward place in Australia because she simply refuses to behave, and that we have decided she has excluded herself from the camp. So when I say involving parents, that's some of the stuff. Let me just check what's here. You do your short-term, disciple making, primary role here. How have you gone just with involving parents, centre stage or on the sides of the youth ministry? Have you tried it? Didn't work? Some of you got parents involved. How did that?
Yeah. Yeah. For us, we had a real shortage of youth leaders, so we actually asked the young people themselves, can they look around and find who they think may make good leaders? And one of them actually came back and said, I think my dad would be great. So, you know, that sets up for it, really.
Yeah. And I think it's great. In fact, if I was going to create the world's ideal 11 to 14-year-old youth group, most of the leaders would be parents. They're just so good. Just so good. But that's got parental wisdom. And it's going to be able to pick when to bounce in and when not. You've got to restrain them a few times.
Yeah. Have you thought of the non-Christian parents that maybe want to...
Okay, you'd like to be a non-Christian parent, Mr. Douglas? Yeah. Would you like to approach me about being on our parent team?
Yeah, I believe Sally Jenkins is helping out with the club, and she's a good friend of mine. Can I come along sometime, though?
Love your enthusiasm. Can I get one of the parents here in this group to talk with you? Let's imagine we haven't got anyone. Does that make sense? We actually get our Christian parents to talk to the helpful non-Christian parents who are. Now, by the way, we're not going to take a non-Christian parent onto the team, even if it's behind the scenes. Now, you might have a different approach. I'm just letting you know what our standard would be. Simply that the kids can't pick the difference. If we're at a camp, the cook we take on the camp needs to be a Christ follower, because kids will pick up from that person values of the kingdom. But be that as it may, the reply would be something like this. That is so fantastic that you're offering. That is absolutely brilliant. But, by the way, which of our small groups do you go to in our church? Oh! You mightn't have had an opportunity to join one of our small groups first. One of our standards for leadership is we take people who are actually in small Bible study groups. Because if you're going to be giving out here, we want to make sure that, you know, we're looking after you. Can I introduce you to someone that can explain a little bit about our small groups? What I'm doing is simply trying to set the bar for what our standards are. Now, let's imagine you do go to a small group. And I don't know you very well, so I say, so who leads that small group? Okay, if I just have a word with them. We normally do this for anyone who's joining us. We do, right? If they say, great guy, not a believer, at some point, I want to actually ask them. I say, look, if you're a parent, you've got to be ready to take questions from kids. So, if a kid comes and says, look, I don't understand how to become a Christian. How did you do it? At some point, I have to say, I love your enthusiasm. There's plenty of things that you can actually do around our church. But we're looking for people who've got an established track record of growing as Christians with us to be on our team, and we'd love to help you to do that. In fact, there's an alpha course at Christmas. Now, it's always tricky, and if you can get a parent to do it, it's so much easier. But that's the way we do it. That's why we don't advertise for helpers. Because if you stand in front of your church service and say, we need people to help with the youth ministry, you'll usually only get the wrong people who respond. Right people doesn't ever seem to respond to that. But it'll be something like that. But I urge you to be careful. It's much easier not to appoint someone than to appoint them and then have to get rid of them. It does happen. We had a husband and wife team. Every appearance of being Christian, as time went on, it became obvious that the wife was a keen Christian and the husband was helping out. As time went by, he actually withdrew. Because he's seen the expectations we had on being Christ-like and being able to tell kids about Jesus. Anything else just involving parents? Any stories, anything that's worked, anything that's been a disaster?
We have a couple of, large-scale weekend retreats with our diocese, and a couple of them are in very nice settings on the beach, nice resorts that we rent out, and it seems it's pretty good to invite some of the parents that you want involved to a really nice resort where they can go to the beach, the hot tubs and the pools, and enjoy the posh settings, and they want to come back and do that every year. But it's a good segue. They go back and they tell the other parents, hey, listen to where the youth went. And then they also tell them about, hey, this is what they learned, and this is what happened. And the posh settings are more of a segue to getting them involved, and then the experience for the weekend helps them share everything else.
Brilliant. We normally emphasize things something like, have you got a tent? Or someone bring a caravan, but often we're on sites that we're busting out of, and we're probably not quite at the luxury in the town as you are. But yes, if you can want them to come, make it work for them. Make it work for them. Anything else just on this one before we move on?
Every year we invite the parents to come along to Sunday evening youth group session, and we've just put on something that's completely the same as we do every other week, so that they get to see what their kids are involved in, and hopefully if it's any good they get to be more enthusiastic about it and see it's not, you know, see that it's useful.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
They're a little bit nervous when they come, but you know, much more so than the kids actually. We thought the kids might not want them there, but they don't seem to mind, but the parents look a bit like...
That is brilliant, I love that. The other thing we do is we try to have our small groups in people's houses. That just means there's a mum and dad who are noticing what's happening in their house. Hopefully they're noticing helpful things. So even we love having our small groups in non-Christians' parents' houses, because they start to notice, because our kids are just so fantastic. And these non-Christians' parents are saying, the kids that come from your church to our house, they're just brilliant kids. I'm so glad that my little Johnny is with such brilliant people.
Can I call him that boy?
Yeah.
Is that not would they not be confused as possible leaders there? They're giving hospitality.
That's a fair question. We haven't struck that problem.
Right.
I think the kids can pick the difference between people who go as leaders on something and people who own the property. Like when you go to a campsite, not every campsite in the world is run by Christians. And I think our kids can pick that some of the staff that are there just run the campsite. That's what they do. So I think it's a good question to ask. We haven't struck a problem with it. Kids usually haven't confused hosts with people in leadership. But if they were, it would be an issue worth looking at. Lady, over to you.
Can I just come back one step? Yeah. Talking about church Christian leaders. Mm. And we've got many parents, aren't we? And how do you discipline somebody else's child in a youth group? Because, you know, like you said, you get somebody else to tell yours. But other parents won't have you criticise their children or pull them into line.
So are these parents who are leaders or parents who are not leaders?
Well, leaders in the sense that they're there, sort of, helping out.
So they're on the team somewhere?
Yeah.
And they might object to you pulling one of their kids into line during the night?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've had it before, you know, well, it was actually in a Sunday school lesson where I had to tell one kid off. And I had a phone call from the mum, why'd you told my child off?
And how did you answer that?
Well, I said, well, this is what, you know, happened, and I couldn't accept that behaviour. Yeah. And she turned around and said, well, you should have did it, disciplined your own, because my son was involved. So I said, I did discipline him as well, so I tell him what pulled me to mind. Which was very critical that I dared to... pull her child into
life. Yes, I guess that's one of the things that there's a possibility it's going to happen. And it's possible, as you explain, this is our standard, and we will hold students to that standard, that you'll get a parent who disagrees, either disagrees with the standard, or disagrees that their kid was made to hit the standard when all the other kids were racing around as well. I don't know there's a magic way of dealing with that, but I'd be cautious about having too many people like that helping out. What you don't want is the two critics sitting up in the balcony being critical of how you run your group. So I'd be looking before I let people in, I'm trying to make sure they're in that square just before they go ahead. Even the, where is the Christian church offside square? That's, church, where are they? I've got completely lost. Offside, Christian, there we go. I'm even cautious about getting parents from there, because I want every leader on my team to support where we're going before they come on the team. That includes parents. Okay, last couple on this, and then I'll move on to the last few points. This man was actually...
Yeah, can I just ask you a question about getting parents in? Mm. When you get parents into a group, do you get them in almost to sit off to one side watching what goes on, or do you get them in?
We deliberately didn't specify, so they come and have tea and coffee beforehand with the kids, have tea and coffee or cake or whatever, just mix around, and when we start, we say, well, people can just take a seat now, and they take a seat with each other if they want to. Then the first sentence, we just say, it's great to have the parents here, it's nice, good that you can come, and then we just carry on as normal with the program.
Yeah, if we had adult visitors to our youth group, our kids sit on the floor. It's carpet, it's just cosy, friendly. We always put out real chairs for the real adults. And to say, we've got some VIP chairs just down the back there, so the parents don't think they're going to sit on the floor with the kids.
How do you handle if you've got adult parent leaders who are not in the Christian church on-site box, who are already leaders in place?
Does that happen? Inheriting existing leaders of any age can be tricky if the standards have not been in place before you're there. Certainly, let's work out what we can control. We can control the standards of any new leaders who join. So there's the first thing. As new people, before new leaders come on board, they come on board on your terms. Even if you've got existing leaders that have never signed up for that. Different people have different ways of dealing with this. I tend to be kind of gentle with it, which can be dangerous, but I kind of be gentle and I keep putting the bar high that eventually the person realises they have no intention of hitting that bar. And as time goes by, they actually say, I'm not sure I can give you the commitment that you need. I'm cautious about jumping in and just blasting people out of the water.
Especially if you don't know anyone to replace them, which is often a problem.
Yes, I try to ignore that as a factor. I know that presses upon you, but I want to plead with you to ignore that as a factor. If the person is not right, then it is not right to have them, and the argument, there's no one to replace them, you've almost got to dismiss that from your mind. You've almost got to think, if I have 10 more replacements, would I remove this person? And if the answer is yes, you've got to still do it. I would like you to believe that no leader is better than the wrong leader. Now, you might just want to think that one through for a while. You think, what do you mean? No leader is better than the wrong leader. If you have no leader, you just can't provide any ministry. Well, let's imagine you've got year 7, year 8, year 9, and you've got no year 8 leaders. You can't provide much of a ministry. But you're almost better off combining the year 8 with the year 9s or something like that as a temporary measure and acknowledging it's not going to be as good as it could, then putting the wrong person in with them, because the wrong person will reproduce what's in their heart. And you'll find a whole year 8 ministry has a bad attitude because you've actually got the wrong person in there. I know that is hard when you've got, you need 5 leaders and you've only got 4 and you're about to lose another one. I know the pressure is on, but I just want to urge you, have the right people as leaders, and you're better looked into a church, and 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 assemble the entire leadership, 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 assemble the entire leadership team. He had a pitch team. He had a presentation for each one of them, a beautiful present, and a certificate of appreciation for their years. He thanked every one of them for all their years of service. He honoured every single one, applauded every single one, and thanked them for their hard years with the youth ministry. Then said, next year, We're starting from fresh. If anyone would like to apply to be on next year's team, I'd love to talk with you. I don't know that I can do that. But that's the way they did it. And just said, if you've been staying on youth ministry because you thought there was nobody else, and if you got off, you know, when you left in the lurch, here's your perfect opportunity to leave with grace, and I thank you for your marvelous work. I wouldn't do that. That's me, I think. I tend to try and help the person come on board, keep the standard high, but eventually they wouldn't be part of the team. That's of any age. We have a school that the children's ministry suddenly came under our orbit, and we discovered that the previous people in the children's ministry had almost taken anyone. And there was these kids in like senior high school who helped out every week. And we worked out they were Christians. And so it took us about a year just to process that with them, and eventually they said, could I stop now? And we said, thank you for everything you've done. But it's a tricky one. And I'll tell you where I'm going to go, just on the time there. I want to talk about equipping your parents, teaching joy. Don't write this down yet, we'll get to it. Teaching joyful submission to teenagers, and then dealing with obstacles. I've got a feeling we're doing the dealing with obstacles now, but I'm happy to do it. So,
just related to what you just said, I took over a youth work, or a youth club rather, really, that was essentially a secular youth club run by people in the village.
Okay.
And that was my background, okay, they didn't participate. I didn't quite think of the youth as something to get lost. What I just did is outline what Christian youth ministry is about. This is the direction we're going. Mm. And those who didn't want to be part of it, jump ship.
Yes. In fact, when I was making the changes in our youth group from being activity based to being gospel centered one, I seemed to say, this is where we're heading. If you're going to be a leader, this is what you'll need to be doing. And some people just said, I don't want to do that. And gracefully withdrew. But it is tricky. Some people will just stay on when they really should go. And you might just have to work out your own wisdom as to how to do it. If you're getting desperate, call your vicar in, call your senior pastor in, and say, I'd have these people over for a meal.
I suppose you could offer a sabbatical kind of idea.
Yes. Find out how many years they've been doing it, and introduce a sabbatical for whatever the following year is. So, if they've been doing it for 5 years, just say, I'll talk to the vicar, and we've decided that everyone in their sixth year of leadership should have a year off. Anyone here in their sixth year of leadership? Oh, you, okay. Possibility. By the way, I think that's a good principle. No matter how committed you are to something, I think it's good to have a break. I coached my son's football team for 12 seasons. I had a break last season. I'm coming back this year. Well, I think it probably helps that I just have the break. Yeah. Help my wife and more. Can I just get on these last few things and then it will be back to you? Point four was involve your parents. Point five is equip your parents. Now, you might not be able to do all this yourself, but there's outside experts you can get in, there's other members of the body of Christ in your church that you can get in. Things like a parents' info night. Just at the start of the year, you might just want to have a parents' information, a coffee evening, a tea evening, and just introduce them to the leaders, let them know what you're doing in the program, introduce yourself, let them know that, you know, we understand family life's hard in the 21st century, we're St. Blog's Church, we're here to help you, love to have your kids along, here's my name, here's my card, call me. So that just establishes a relationship. You're normally more on side with someone you have a relationship with than someone who's just an unknown quantity out there doing things with my children.
And if they don't turn up, just forget it, I guess.
It's not a compulsory parents meeting.
Okay.
By the way, if I was starting a little boy's football team again, you know, under nines, I would have a compulsory parents meeting. Just to say, this week, for the last 15 minutes of training, every boy must have at least one parent there. Otherwise, you can't be on the team. I need, as the coach, to give you some information so that we can work together and make this the best for your son. But in Christian ministry, I would just offer it as a... And I would only be expecting a quarter of a parent to show up. But if you keep doing it, if a parent then complains that they don't know what's going on, said, oh my goodness, you must have got all that mail we sent to your house about the parents' evening. Can we contact Royal Mail together and just, you know. parents' training. You know, he had been a parent, just found you weren't quite sure what you were meant to do. It's a little tricky, isn't it? You need a license to get married, but you don't need a license to have children. You need a license to get a dog or a TV in the United Kingdom. I don't know that a 22-year-old youth pastor is the right person to do parent training. To be the instructor for parent training. There's plenty of Christians you can call in. There may even be people in your own church, like your vicar or one of the pastors, or you might even have a family ministry or men's ministry or women's ministry. There's plenty of Christians who can do it. But once again, a proportion of the parents will come, but it's just something I think, oh goodness, this church cares about my family. I'm glad I've got my children there. Parents support, and this is particularly where you've got your own parents on the team. They're just looking for ways to support families. They hear of a family, you know, the parents or one of the kids are in trouble, you know, because, you know, there's illness in the family or whatever. You should have some people in your church that can take meals, that sort of stuff. So, do things to help equip parents. They have a very hard job. And if you can just be a little bit of help along the way, that would be great for you. The sixth thing I've got here is teach youth joyful submission to their parents. Teach youth joyful submission to their parents. This is the thing that has impacted parents in our part of town more than anything else we have ever done, when they see their child change, their Christian child change from being a little monster at home to actually being helpful. This often happens on our camp. The camp that's on right now that I'm missing, I get parents up to the camp. You say, what did you do to my child on that camp? I didn't touch them. I said, they are a different person. They have just come back totally changed. Their attitude, their behaviour, their respect for me and my husband. If you're teaching it and modelling it, it will have an effect on your students and it will have an effect on their parenting in any category. If you've got parents outside that little category, it will have a very powerful effect. Even the parents who don't understand something about Jesus think, my teenager is so much nicer at home since he's been going to that church youth group. I'll send all the other kids to that church and see. And that's your discipleship teams, where you actually teach them the principles of godly submission to authority. If any of you are in Leaders Who Will Last, there's a chapter in the middle called You Are a Follower, which is designed to teach youth leaders how to submit to rightful authority in their church, but you can all the principles apply to children at home. So I think that's an important one, and that's for us being the most powerful thing in winning parents over. The two most valid things is Christian parents seeing the amazing ministry that happens, and the other one is being parents in general seeing the change in their child, and someone start coming to church. They're thinking, change my kid. I should show up at that church and just see what happens. We've had a lot of parents start coming to our church because their kids started coming first. And that's reversing leadership of the family, but it's been a huge blessing from God. To see that. Our key parents, who actually are there week in, week out in the youth ministry, they give their testimony. They'll say it was our 14-year-old boy who went along to our youth group and came home and told us about Jesus, and we thought we should go. They've come to Christ, and now they're our key parents. Okay, dealing with obstacles, we've probably covered a bit of this, but I have a few things to finish off with. Tell me, are any obstacles you're facing with parents? And just, let's just see if there's any wisdom in this room. Yes, sir.
When parents are telling their children to do something unbiblical.
Right, murder the next door neighbour, that sort of stuff.
Well, that's, I've got a person who's desperate to get baptised.
Yeah.
But mum who is basically backsliding hugely is saying, no, come.
Okay, and what is your wish for the young person? What have you told them about yourself?
You've got to be in submission to your parents.
Yeah.
Up until the point where you can't do it anymore and you have to follow Christ. I think there'll be a crunch point where she has to say, either I do what's right and follow Christ.
There's a messy dividing line in our culture between children and adults. In biblical times, it was pretty clear cut. By age 14, you were married and you're no longer a child. Bar mitzvah at 13, married at 14, and there was the dividing line. It was pretty clear. You're 15, you honoured your parents always, but the time to obey them was actually different because you're now living as an independent family unit. Leaving the father and mother could be your wife. That's the division. In our society, and we can blame Christians for this, there's extended adolescence. Sorry, Christians were the one that got education going and kept loved children together for extended periods of time, helped create adolescence. So now, kids won't leave home in Australia until their mid-20s. Even in their late 20s, parents are still trying to kick them out and staying home. Where does the point come between honouring parents, which is always a command, until your dying day, or whatever age, and obeying them? See, when I want to stay out late at night, I don't ring my mum and ask her if it's okay. Somewhere along the line, I might check with my wife, that would be cool, because I have left my father and mother to cleave to my wife. But young single people heading for 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, it's a grey line. I have a guideline, and this is not a biblical guideline. Okay? It's an operational guideline. I could be stinkingly wrong. I say to them, if you choose... This is, you know, getting along 18 plus. If you choose to live under your parents' roof, you are choosing to live under their direct authority. Now, that's not a biblical guideline. Does that make sense? It could be wrong. It's just trying to make sense of crazy Australian culture. So, with the baptism person, there's a theology of baptism that comes in here. When I look at baptism, I'm thinking what really matters to Jesus is a change of heart. That inside you are crying out for a clean conscience that you want to be with Him. It's conversion. Outwardly symbolised by baptism. I would not think a girl as being disobedient to God to delay water baptism. Does that make sense? Now, some of the different theology of baptism value. If a young person honestly believes they are disobeying God by obeying their parents, then at some point, Acts 4:29, Acts 5:29, which one is it, comes in, we'll obey God rather than them. If you're a Christian child and your parents instruct you to murder the next door neighbour, I would say, biblically, you have every right to say, I choose not to. I will obey Jesus, even if that means I get grounded. If a parent prohibits their little Johnny from going to church, I heard a youth worker once suggest to the kid to sneak out the window and come. I'm thinking, that is, you actually model joyful submission that even when the parent is cutting off and having a spiritual avenue. We had a boy in our youth ministry, he was about 14. And it was a non-Christian family, and he'd become a Christian. He loved reading his Bible. And his parents prohibited him from reading his Bible. Now, he didn't ask us for advice. He just chose his own path. He read his Bible. And I said, Craig, what do your parents do when they catch you reading your Bible? He said, they send me to my room. I said, what are you doing in your room? He said, I read my Bible. That's a tricky one, but you'll win parents to Christ by them seeing godly submission by their children. So there's all sorts of hairy areas there at the top end of teenage years, but operationally I say, look, if you're choosing to live under your parents' roof, then I think you're still in the obey rather than honour department. I think when you move out, you are in the honour, not the obey department. But that could be wrong. The Bible never said that. That's just me trying to make sense of Australian culture.
Can I ask you a question that's very similar, but on a less kind of spiritual issue? We've got a 17, 18-year-old girl in our group who's been converted from a very non-Christian home, very, very aggressively anti-parent, and she's done an enormously wise job of negotiating how often she comes to church and all that kind of stuff. Where the rubber's really hit the road is over an educational issue, where her dad wants her to be a doctor. She is, by temperament, an artist, and her best subject for art and French in her kind of 16-year-old exams. But she has taken physics and chemistry in submission to her parents. Absolutely hates them, really struggling. And in the last couple of weeks, she's really started just to come apart at the seams because she's being forced to do something which she believes is right out of submission to her parents, but actually she physically doing it. She's really struggling with it.
In fact, I'm even surprised that she's taken that step.
Yeah.
I would have thought, you know, 9 out of 10 would have said, Dad, I honour you, Dad, I respect you.
Yeah.
That is not a career I'm going to stand for at all. Now, this is grossly inadequate because it's a 30-second response. I think the time is coming for her to say to her dad, I understand your passion for this. This is not what I want to do at all. Here is where I'm skilled. Is it okay with you if I choose what I want to do to still live here? Or will I need to move out? So I'm assuming she's still coming.
Yes, yes.
Because I want her dad to say, you know, don't move out of this family. But if in the end, the only way she was to stay at home was to do what Daddy wanted, I think for her own emotional health, she actually needs to get out. So that's a tricky one. But I think, you know, we fight all this stuff because there's extended adolescence. There was a thing in Australia, the Australian government had a commission for the future to try and work out where things would be. And their estimates of by 2020, which is not very far away now, the average starting age for a full-time job in Australia would be 28. That for the 10 years after you leave school, there'd be a mixture of part-time work, part-time study, full-time study, part-time community work. But 28 would be the new starting full-time job age. That's scary. But in our part of the world, it's probably only about 24 at the moment, because everybody goes to uni in that part of the world. We're going to have dinner in a moment. Can I just finish with a couple of things, just as the final keys for sorting out working with parents? Number one, liaise closely with your senior pastor. In whatever you're going to do with parents, you need to be talking to the vicar or the rector or the senior pastor or the minister, whatever he's called, the person who actually has the headship over your congregation, that you are in fact working under that person's vision in the direction they want. And if you're talking about it, that means if you're striking problems with parents, you can actually get your senior pastor to work with you so you don't have to fight the battles yourself. So there's suggestion number one, go closely with your senior pastor. Number two, have a written biblical plan. That is your biblical basis, your theological basis, your understanding of ministry, which will actually mean something to your church Christian parents and hopefully to your unchurch Christian parents. Because sometimes it's Christian parents who are the most oppressive. They don't mean to be. They really want to get it right for their kid. And they really want their kid to be a strong Christian. And they really get annoyed if they think you're not doing it right. If you can have a written biblical plan, so that when that parent is saying, how come you're running a youth group? My little boy doesn't want to go. It'll be good if you've done this the last year, Pastor. You can actually say, look, thank you for raising that with me. Remember, a complaint is an opportunity to grow a relationship you wouldn't have had without the complaint. Thank you for raising it with me. Could you take that away and have a look at it? We've tried to put down what we think the Bible is saying about ministry. Therefore, that's why we run the group this way. Could you have a look at it and see if you can spot the stuff we've missed and see if you can help us with it and come back to us? No one's ever come back to me. But if they do, you can actually graciously receive their suggestions. But I think another point is that work hard at getting that group of parents involved in your youth ministry, and once they are, get them to take care of all the other qualities. It's a brilliant, and then you get on with hanging with the kids. Is that enough for you? Are you ready for supper?
Tea.
Can I pray for you guys and then Father God, thank you that we don't just get to know the teenagers, we get to know the families. Thank you that there are mums and dads, some of whom care about their teenagers and some of whom don't, but they all need you. Help us to sensibly involve the right people on our team as parents. Give us wisdom when we're dealing with the difficult ones, and Father, we pray that through the disagreements they might have will be an opportunity for us to build a relationship that will lead them to you. Thank you for the privilege of working with families. Amen.
Amen.
Hope that was helpful.